Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks. This week, we are returning to Hush, Matt. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, did you miss Hush?
Yeah, I missed Hush, Bob. Man, I didn't realize this character had so much history. Every time, like I say that at the beginning of every one of these episodes, it just keeps going. Yeah. I don't know how I missed all this.
As listeners may or may not remember, you don't necessarily need to go back and listen to these episodes. I don't think it's super dependent on what's came before, but since Hush 2, or Hatoosh, was coming out, we decided to revisit not everything, but a lot of things from Hush's past. What we did, Hush versus Broken City. We did Hush Returns, the Gotham Knights story. And Heart of Hush, which came at the end in Paul Dini's Detective Comics run. And then a couple months ago, we looked at Hush Money, which is opening art of Hush Dini's Money. Streets of Gotham. Now we're looking at House of Hush, which is the concluding arc of Dini's Streets of Gotham. We're switching up the format a little. Apologies for having this convoluted explanation, but before we were pairing a part of Hush 2 with old Hush comic, and we think we reached the limit of the utility of that, so we're just going to talk about House of Hush this time, and then we'll talk about Hush 2 separately, and then we may or may not talk about the future parts of Hush 2, depending on if we have anything to say about them. Does that sound good, Matt?
Hush 2 is so bad that we wanted to dedicate a whole episode to just talking about how bad it is. Didn't want to bring this down.
We thought House of Hush deserved a little bit of autonomy, a little bit of independence. And I guess, to be fair, we're not literally looking at every single thing that has Hush in it, just most of it. And we do know that at the same time that the Streets of Gotham series came out, Dini was also writing Gotham City Sirens, and Hush apparently shows up a little in that. Neither you or I have read that yet, but our plan is, and we're not sure when, but our plan is at some point we'll cover that too. Does that sound good, Matt?
Yeah, we're going to have the all-encompassing Hush. If you need to know about Hush, come to Uncanny Treks.
Even though I think this series is pretty good, I don't think we're ever going to cover the Batman and Robin story from a couple years ago that introduces Shush, female Hush.
Oh, God, every time it gets brought up, I just laugh. It's so stupid.
It's genius. It actually is. It is a bad comic. I just don't need to talk about it.
Shush.
And this episode is too much Bob-splaining, but I'm going to really quickly walk our listeners through what we're skipping in between Hush Money and House of Hush. Does that sound good, Matt?
Yeah, and just be forewarned, I think we're just skipping it because it's not that interesting, right?
It's not terrible. If you wanted to read the whole of the Streets of Gotham, you could. I just didn't think there was much percentage, and I think you agreed in us talking to the listeners about it. So we're skipping issues 5 through 11 of Streets of Gotham, which were originally collected in a trade called Leviathan. And Matt, do you remember the Black Suit X-Force comics?
Oh, I've read a couple. They're great.
One of the co-writers on that, who also I think was a co-writer for the two latest X-Men cartoons before X-Men 97, Wolverine and the X-Men and Evolution, is Chris Yost. And he wrote a two-part fill-in. It's Huntress versus Man-Bat. This is issues 5 and 6 of Streets of Gotham that we're skipping. It's pretty good. It's a very, I would say, B-plus storyline. I like Huntress and Man-Bat a lot. It doesn't really have anything to do with what we're concerned about. But that's the first fill-in we're skipping. Then we're skipping issues 8 and 9 of Streets of Gotham. And that's a two-part fill-in written by Mike Benson, who did a run on Moon Knight that I remember somewhat fondly. It was the follow-up to Charlie Houston's run, I believe. And this Mike Benson two-part fill-in on Streets of Gotham, it's basically Dick Grayson going undercover in an S&M club. Not very good. Not very good.
I realize all these sound very interesting, folks, but they're not. Trust me. You're not missing
Huntress
anything.
Huntress and Man-Bat.
The writer, Chris Yost, is a great writer, like you said, with X-Force. But this other stuff, Dick Grayson going undercover in an S&M club, is not as cool as you think it is.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, if you're a certain person who's thirsty for Dick Grayson, I get if you need to read it.
No.
I'm talking to Alan. And then we're also going to skip a three-part Dini story that is basically, it's not literally three parts, but number 7 is the setup, and then issues 10 and 11 of Streets of Gotham are like the main parts of it. And that's a three-part story about Damian fighting Mr. Zazz. And Mr. Zazz in that story is running a fight ring for children, which I gotta say, props to Paul Dini for finding a way to make Mr. Zazz even creepier. If you were looking at the naked serial killer with tally marks etched into his skin, and he's not creepy enough. having him supervising the abuse of children. That's even creepier. So good job, Saldini.
What if Mr. Zsasz ran a daycare?
Yeah, which if you think about it, was also the plot of Nightfall Part 3.
That's true. It's girls boarding school.
Really creepy, all that stuff. So that said, I didn't think it was especially great story. And Matt, do you remember a character named Abuse from the Heart of Hush story that we covered a couple months ago?
Yeah, he's the kid who Scarecrow gets the Scarecrow fear toxin or something. He gets something injected into him. He basically turns into the Hulk or something.
A ginger Hulk who runs on fear toxin and memories of childhood abuse and calls himself Abuse. And he's a major part of this Mr. Zsasz three-parter. It's not so good in my mind. And then also in the next story, I can't remember if it's this story or the next story, but Damien and Abuse bond and Damien gives Abuse a bat cycle and he calls the cycle of Abuse.
Okay. That's, man, just when you think you got it, it's just, no.
Yeah.
Deanie, so come on.
That was the quick rundown of Streets of Gotham Volume 2, Leviathan. And then the final collection of Streets of Gotham is Streets of Gotham Volume 3, House of Hush. But the first two stories in that are not really related to House of Hush. They're a two-part story about the Mad Hatter's Harley Quinn, the Carpenter, who you may remember from late in the Paul Dini detective run. And terrible by any means. Not bad, but Deanie, you got to think. You helped create Harley Quinn. You got a thing for her. You want the Mad Hatter to have a version of her. I got it.
And the Carpenter sounds like a character that should have been in the Batman with that carpenting tool or whatever the Riddler.
The Riddler has his versions of Harley Quinn too, right?
Isn't it
Query and Echo?
Query and Echo. That's correct. Yes. So what we need to do at the end of this is maybe rank all of Dini's villains he's created here.
Oh, that'd be. Well, I guess we need to get through Streets of Gotham.
Yeah, true.
Maybe we could go back and tally up the new characters. That's a good call. I didn't think about that, but that's a good call. All right. Well, now, listeners, all that preface out of the way, we're ready for the prelude. You made it from the preface to the prelude. So we're going to start with Streets of Gotham number 14, which is the prelude to House of Hush. Matt, what goes down it? 14, House of Hush prelude.
So Judson Pierce is released from prison with only one thing on his mind. Destroy Bruce Wayne.
Indeed, Matt. Maybe this will throw you off, but I guess I should ask, who is Judson Pierce? Is he related to Black Lightning?
I don't know, Bob. No, he's just some gangster from when Thomas Wayne and Martha Wayne were around.
Yeah, in this issue and in future issues, we get a lot of flashbacks about Hush's parents and Batman's parents. So we see Roger and Marla Elliott, Hush's parents. We see Martha, a.k.a. Marty Kane, Batman's mom. We see eventually Leslie Tompkins. We see John Zatara, Zatanna's dad, or as I call him, Giovanni Zatara. And then we see Tommy Wayne, Batman's dad. And related to this is Judson Pierce, who, let's see, did he both screw Martha Kane's dad out of his fortune, and then he also screwed the Elliots out of their money, too? Is that right?
I think so. I know he screwed Martha Kane's because he makes this awful joke at one point about like Martha Kane can just go spread her legs to any billionaire and get money or whatever. That's disturbing. Denny doesn't pull punches with his dialogue. There's some skeezy stuff in here.
That was the era of these late aughts, early teens comics, right? This was a little bit pre-woke. I'm not criticizing Denny, right, or praising him. I'm just observing that the milieu and the mores were slightly different in late aughts, early teens, than they are in the mid to late teens, historically speaking. Well, Matt, my favorite page from this issue would be 58, and we see Hush, who's in prison, having a fantasy about escaping and taking his revenge on all the outsiders and Justice Leaguers who are collaborating in his imprisonment because he's got Bruce Wayne's face. And he's gut-shotting Katana in his fantasy with John Woo style, the two guns. It's a cool picture. So I went with that splash page. It's my favorite page.
It really is. And at the bottom, you've got Creeper and Black Canary. And it looks like Owlman, but I may be wrong.
Yeah, I think it's probably Owlman. He's in The Outsiders at this point. I think he's the son of Roy Raymond, the television detective, who's taken on the Owlman identity.
He also looks like he killed Alfred.
Matt, what was your favorite page in this issue?
My favorite page, Bob, is on page 64. In one of the flashbacks, we have Thomas Wayne meeting Martha Kane, I guess for the first time, and he pukes on her.
Yeah, what did you think of how this whole flashback sequence sort of recontextualizes Thomas and Martha?
I'm okay with it. It gives them a real relationship that's not just this fake, what you see in the films where they're always these upstanding citizens. I don't like it when they take Thomas and Martha and make them complete thugs, but at the same time, I don't like them to be this perfect couple. I like this more, there's a middle ground, and I think Denny covers that pretty well.
I tend to agree with you. I should hate this because I'm well on the record in hundreds of episodes of this podcast about hating prequels, right?
Right.
But on the one other hand, this is pretty well done as far as prequels go. And to your point, usually when we see stuff involving Thomas and Martha Wayne in Batman comics, it's usually using them as props for a pretty mediocre story. It's usually, oh, they were involved in this, and this has resonances for Batman and
right.
But like you were saying, Dini does a really good job of humanizing Thomas and Martha Wayne, of giving them conflicting personalities and friction. It does make them feel more, as much as anybody in a superhero comic can be, quote unquote, real people, rather than just these trauma archetypes that have to be deployed every 2 years in a Batman comic.
Which I guess, Bob, from Bruce Wayne's perspective, that's what they are. They're just these saints to him.
Yeah, because you don't understand your parents at all when you just see them as your parents.
And they are forever that in his mind, which is fine. But then when you read these stories with the flashbacks, it's like, okay, they were real people, you know, not just... Obviously, Thomas Wayne was a bit of a womanizer. He's drinking an alcohol out of a shoe.
And it is funny that Giovanni Zatara is his carousing partner. That could be a little too cute, but on the other hand, I like it. And is interesting that it ties in Leslie Tompkins, because usually in prequels and flashbacks in Batman, it's Leslie and Thomas are friends and colleagues because they're both doctors. But it's interesting to have Leslie be in the Wayne's lives because of Martha and not vice versa, right?
Yeah, and that really is the significance of these flashbacks, is that you learn about how her clinic was created, how Thomas and Martha come together, and then there's a bit of mafioso drama to go along with it.
It's also funny that presumably there's been even more than two generations, but it's funny that there's been two generations at least of decadent Wayne playboys in Gotham. All right. Well, the last blast from the past, Matt, we have Jane Doe showing up on the last page of the Prelude issue. Did you remember Jane Doe from Dan Slott's Arkham Asylum mini?
I did remember Jane Doe, yes, because the Great White Shark, he was the main character in that run.
Arkham Asylum, Living Hell. People should track it down.
Well worth reading, yes.
Great White Shark was a big part, not so much in Streets of Gotham, but in Detective Comics, the Paul Dini Detective Comics run. And although that seemed less inspired by the Dan Slott miniseries and more, I think at that time they were trying to make Great White Shark a rival ganglord to Black Mask all across the
I do think it's interesting, this does become a plot point later, that Jane Doe and Hush kind of have the same gimmick.
They do and they don't, but they definitely, like you say, they're definitely real important similarities that Dini plays with. You're very right about that. Well, Matt, one more bit of Bob exposition, and then we should be spared this. Right. This is issue number 14. And then the prelude is actually pretty short. I think it's only 10 or 15 pages. And then the rest of that issue was part one of a three-part Two-Face story. And that was the main story in 15. And so 15 hasn't been collected. And then it was the backup story in 16. And we're also just going to skip that Two-Face three-parter. I didn't. Sorry, listeners. I failed in my due diligence. So we're now coming to issue 16 of Streets of Gotham. This is chapter one of House of Hush. What goes down in chapter
one? Well, Bob, in chapter one of House of Hush, Jane Doe breaks out of Arkham Asylum while Hush and Zatanna attend an event together.
And Matt, this plays to your earlier point about we should rank all the new Dini characters when we get to the end of Gotham City Sirens. Were you surprised at how consistently the Wonderland gang keeps showing up in this Dini run? Here we see the Tweeds and we see Humpty Dumpty, and we saw them at the end of the Detective Comics run. So were you surprised at how constant the Wonderland gang has been?
They do show up a lot. Also, doesn't Lockup show up at one point?
Yeah, do you remember Lockup? He was created for
animated series.
I think he came into the comics around No Man's Land.
That's correct.
Yeah, so we get a little bit of a Lockup cameo here, too. Well, Matt, my favorite page or panel from House of Hush chapter one is on page 80. And I really like Zatanna's dress. I think it looks very good. And then I also like Hush calling her a sideshow tramp. And then later, Hush does this a couple times in this arc. He gets pretty racist and calls Zatanna a filthy gypsy. And so it's interesting, both Zatanna's formal look with unimpressed wearing the top hat over her dress, or the smaller top hat over her dress, and then Hush's vitriol and racism. I just thought that was interesting.
Do you think he's just acting as Bruce Wayne?
Listeners, what Matt's referring to, and I totally forgot, he's exactly right, is we find out, I think in the Devin Grayson run, we have a whole plot about Dick reconnecting with his gypsy or Romani family.
Correct.
And we have the ghost of Thomas Wayne being really racist against Romanis.
Yes, we do. Because he doesn't really want Dick to go back and meet meet anyone. He doesn't want to meet who he thinks is his grandfather.
That was a good joke, Matt. I can't believe I forgot what an anti-Romani racist. Yeah. Maybe Hush actually has very progressive views on the Romani people. Maybe it's only Bruce Wayne.
He's just playing his point. I will say this, Zatanna's outfit reminds me of like something Stevie Nicks would wear, which I thought was pretty cool. Oh, yeah. My favorite panel, though, Bob, is on page 84, where she just flat out tells Hush to Hush.
All right. So moving on to issue number 17, House of Hush, chapter 2, reunions. What goes down in chapter 2, Matt?
Well, Bob, at the end of the last chapter, Hush is kidnapped by... So the real Bruce Wayne has returned to Gotham City, and he faces Bedbug, while Hush actually overtakes his captors.
Yeah, Matt. So we meet Bedbug, who's another new Dini creation. Is this the grossest Batman villain we've ever seen?
I was trying to think of others. Cornelius Sturk. Cornelius Sturk was disgusting as well, though.
He's sort of Hannibal Lecter, but there's also some sort of cannibalism hallucination thing going on with Cornelius Sturk.
Yeah.
Amygdala was another pretty nasty late 80s one. Zazz is definitely a good candidate.
All the stuff Professor Pig has done.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a good point. The filth of Bedbug. And also the fact that living in a city, I've had to take, you know, precautions against bedbugs, and it's a thing I actually do have some anxiety about, right?
I think we all do, Bob, because if I ever get itchy skin, it's just because my skin is dry, but I swear I think it's bedbugs, and it drives me nuts. Like, I don't... Did you ever have that issue? After you shower, your skin gets dry from the hot water, and you're laying in bed. Why am I itching? No, please don't be bedbugs, and it's not. Never actually had them, but it is a fear.
Yeah, it is one of the downsides of city life. I much prefer city life, but ooh, bedbugs, man. Bedbugs.
So going back real quick, Bob, just to talk, Cornelius Sturk, he used the fear toxin just like Scarecrow. It's the same idea. And that's why Scarecrow takes him out, or Joker takes him out.
Wasn't it a more specific thing? He would manifest to you as someone you feared? It was a more specific localized than Scarecrow.
He can make other people see him as someone else.
There's one where he's like appearing to somebody as Abraham Lincoln.
Then he appears to Batman as James Gordon. He takes your heart out.
That's right.
Whereas the guy I was talking about was Abattoir, who just wants to eat his family members.
Oh, and he does eat. He doesn't just want to kill him. With the name like Abattoir, it does kind of imply that he would eat them.
I would hope so, because that's not just killing your family members is one thing.
I don't know if we'll ever actually do this, Matt, but I would be, because most of these characters we're talking about are Alan Grant, Norm Brayfogle villains from their run on late 80s Detective Comics and then Shadow of the Bat in the early 90s. And I haven't read much of that stuff, and I would really be down to revisit some of that stuff with you at some point.
Apparently, the idea with Abattoir, I just read up on it, is that he thinks that killing them, he can absorb their essence.
Honestly, Matt, I think your idea, why not? Why not? He's already, like you say, he's already a spiritual cannibal. Why not make him a literal cannibal?
What they need to do is just combine these two characters.
There's a reason that they had Abattoir be the one Jean-Paul Valley killed in Night's End, right?
Right.
Night's Quest. I think there's a good reason for that. I think it was Night's End. But I don't know. I think there's potential in Cornelius Sturk. I wouldn't mind seeing a Cornelius Sturk revival. What Paul Dini does with Cornelius Sturk, I think, could be interesting.
Well, don't worry, Bob. H2SH is going to happen with Cornelius Sturk.
Oh, man. I can't wait till Cornelius Sturk shows up in A Touche Part 5.
I'm going to put keyword in this episode, Cornelius Sturk, just to see if anything pops up.
Is it Sturk or Sturk? I'm not
sure. S-T-I-R-K.
To somewhat get back on track, I think. One of my favorite pages, although not my absolute favorite, was on 98, where Catwoman is blaming Harley Quinn's hyenas for bedbugs. I thought that was pretty good.
The hyenas are just... Where did I read where hyenas... It maybe it was... Oh, it left me. Sorry. I was reading something not too long ago.
Did I send you a meme about hyenas?
Yes, that's what it was. Hyenas popped up in my head.
Was it saying that they were closer to cats than dogs?
I think so.
I think I sent you a meme about that a while back.
Well, Bob, my favorite panel in this issue is on page 107, and it's Alfred, like, in the past. Flashback Alfred doing kung fu in Leslie Tompkins' clinic.
Well, Matt, let me recommend a little TV show for you called Pennyworth, The Secret Origin.
No. See, I'm okay with one panel of Alfred doing a kick, and I'm good.
You don't need three seasons of The Secret Origin of Batman's
Bob. No, I can just imagine that he knew kung fu, and he's just... Even Thomas Wayne's looking at him in the image, well, what's Alfred doing?
I don't really want this, but I could get down with, like, a story that's a little bit the more adventures of this version of Tommy and Marty Wayne and Alfred and the Elliots. I don't want too much of it, but one miniseries about it. I could get down with that.
I want a medical drama about Leslie Tompkins. I want it to be like Grey's Anatomy.
Well, Matt, my favorite moment was a couple pages after this on 110, and we see Hush as Bruce basically just going, you know, combination of John Woo and John Moxley as he shoots one of Judson Pierce's mobsters in the shoulder, and he's choking another with a chain. I really dug that. It was very funny seeing this level of brutality from somebody who looks like Bruce Wayne. I like that.
I have to commend Denny for going with the whole thing that Hush is a fantastic shot. Because that is one of his characteristics. He's a really good marksman. Because he's always shooting people in the shoulder, never kills any of these people. It's so weird. I don't know if you've realized this as we've gone through. Every time he shoots somebody, he can shoot them right where he wants to.
I didn't notice, but that's a good point. And I mean,
no one dies.
Denny's commitment to maintaining all the aspects of Hush from the Jeff Loeb run, especially with the Aristotle quotes, actually pretty impressive. But this is the place to reflect on it. In the episode, but this, you gotta give Denny props, man. This is about as good a story as you could ever do with Hush, right? How would you ever do anything better?
You really couldn't. That's why I cannot believe that we have a sequel to the original. This is so much better.
That totally disregards all of this better stuff.
That's what freaks me out, too.
When we were comparing this off mic with Dr. Hurt in Grant Morrison and then spoilers in Ram V's detective run, it's really impressive when someone like Ram V or Paul Dini takes a character who's designed for one specific thing in an event story, and then they actually find a way to be, okay, how do you use it, right?
Right. Yeah. But you're not going to get better Hush than this.
Oh, and I guess I should say, Matt, we should say Dustin Nguyen is the artist on this, as he was also the artist on Hush Money, and he was definitely the artist on the last couple of collections of Paul Dini's Detective Comics run. And maybe we'll be a little more specific about Nguyen's art in a couple more issues, but I just wanted to say Nguyen does a hell of a job on the art. It's really good art. It sort of looks like Jeff Lemire, sort of looks like Mike Mignola, sort of looks like the animated series, sort of looks like its own thing. It's doing a lot, and it's real fun.
It's great artwork, and he captures all the action. He knows how to choreograph a scene with the way the panels run. I love it.
Yeah, good fight choreography, but also good thing from his figures and panels. And the flashbacks in particular, the colorist does a great job on those. Well, Matt, should we move on to chapter 3, issue number 18 of Streets of Gotham, Bedbugs Bite?
Yeah, and the Bedbugs Bite, Bob. Batman discovers a cure for bedbugs, and Hush meets up with Dr. Death.
Yeah, did you recognize the name Carl Helfern?
I looked it up and everything, and he was one of the first Batman villains.
Usually he's accounted as the very first Batman supervillain. He's a mad scientist. He's in two consecutive issues of Detective Comics. I want to say 29 and 30, although maybe I'm slightly wrong about that, but I think it would be 29 and 30. He's wild. He's been revived a couple of times since he is the first supervillain, but I think it had been a while. The other story I know about him is, I haven't read it, but I think Jerry Conway did a story of Dr. Death in the early 80s.
Well, Bob, in this issue, my favorite panel happens to be on page 21, and it goes back to that choreography I was talking about. It uses an image of Bedbug jumping over Batman. The reason it's my favorite panel is because I just want to highlight that, why is it every single villain that Batman faces has to be a gymnast? Every one of them. You can't go up against Batman unless you have had at least 20 years of gymnastics training.
My sort of serious answer to that is, if you want to have a villain be any sort of physical threat to Batman and they're not hulking, which a lot of his aren't, so Scarecrow, Harley Quinn, Joker, here, Bedbug, then having them be really Riddler, having them be really wiry, really hard to get a hold of, able to leap and jump and escape, it's to make them something of a physical threat, or at least a physical challenge to catch. If you're not going to go with a hulking brute like your Bane or your Killer Croc,
your options are big hulking guy or lanky person that can jump around.
I don't think he's ever been a Batman villain, but the Starman villain Ragdoll does that too. From good points about villains, maybe to a weaker point, on 123, does seeing Hush have to go back to his bandages and especially that tunic with the H symbol on it?
Oh, it's so, I hate his costume. He has the stupidest costume.
Bandages would be fine.
It's got a turtleneck on it. I get he needs a utility belt.
What? It's totally just, oh, he's evil Batman, so he's a utility.
Originally, my understanding was this outfit was meant to be Jeff Loeb's interpretation of Jason Todd as a grown-up Robin. Remember, because this is the outfit he wears when he's holding Tim Drake by the neck, which just so happens to be how our next issue of Hush 2H, whatever, opens up. But it's not Tim Drake, it's Damian Wayne. We'll talk about that.
Jeff Loeb do have his obsessions.
He does. Anyway, so I never liked this outfit. I always thought it was really stupid. And
so this reminded you of a worse comic, but this issue reminded me of a slightly better comic, in that on 124, the last panel, we have a very cool image of Dr. Death, but this is a new design for Dr. Death. And he looks very similar to the Golden Age Sandman, Wesley Dodds. And I was wondering how intentional that similar look was.
It was intentional to confuse pedants like me, Bob, because I was, why is Sandman in here? Thankfully, he says his name in the panel.
And even still, it was like, has Sandman become Dr. Death?
Yeah. Is he just lying? Like, is he?
Yeah, I do love that Golden Age Sandman series, Sandman Mystery Theater. I don't know if it would ever make good podcasting material, but I dearly, dearly love that series.
It is good. I've read it. And I've also read Sandman by Neil Gaiman, Bob. How you feel about that?
You know, Matt, I think we should probably just keep on moving to issue number 19.
All right, issue number 19.
House of Hush, Chapter 4, Reason for Hyenas. What goes down in Chapter 4, Matt?
So Hush enlists the help of his intern, and Bedbug sees Batman making out with Catwoman.
I do have to say, Matt, after reading the in-between trade between Hush Money and this House of Hush, the reading Leviathan, the in-between trade, I was occasionally a little confused, because it took me a while in that collection to remember, oh yeah, this is Dick Grayson Batman, not Bruce Wayne Batman. And then going straight into this, I was, oh, when is it Dick Grayson, when is it Bruce Wayne? That was occasionally an issue for me when reading this.
Well, when Catwoman's on the page, it's Bruce Wayne.
When they were making out, and the prior issue, I was, okay, that's definitely not Dick Grayson. Yeah. He'd definitely not be making out with Catwoman.
Wouldn't it be funny if Deanie was, like, just going with it?
Oh, man, that's funny. I think my favorite panel from this issue is 131, and we get a really amazing splash page of young Joker, early Joker. Has the face, but not the paint, I guess you would say. And then there's also a really good line from Judson Pierce about, and I think this is a really interesting way to think about the Joker, that the first time they saw him, they didn't know if he was a performance artist or a criminal.
That is cool. Yeah, I did like the Joker flashback. It was a good way to put him in the story without having to, like, bring him into the modern.
Much more organic way to work him into the flashback.
But what I love, though, is that at one point, Hush does mention that he's had a lot of run-ins and hates the Joker, and that the Joker's next on the list after Bruce Wayne, which I'm like, okay, so he's actually acknowledging the Gotham Knights stuff. So thanks, Paul Dini, for acknowledging other people's work. We like that.
We both had to recreate Loeb's Hush and resolve Lieberman's Hush. Yep. That was a lot of work.
It really was. Bob, my favorite panel in this issue is on page 143, where we see in the shadow that Catwoman is wearing a top hat to look like the Zatanna. And then you see her with the top hat on the next page, the silhouette. Yeah, cool.
It's a really cool image. I'm glad you drew our attention to it. I also do have to just a little bit get the fire hose and be, all right, Dini, your two favorite characters combined in one image. Yeah. Calm down. Calm down. Yeah. Oh, man. To keep moving to issue number 20 of Streets of Gotham, which is House of Hush, Chapter 5, Infestation. What goes on in Infestation, Matt? And what was your favorite panel from this comic?
Well, on page 151, we have Batman falling through a skylight. And Catwoman is like attached to him as he's falling down just because that's how she's going to get into the building. It was just a weird, it's a utility move.
But it also sort of looks like she's hugging him.
Yeah, I've just never seen anything like it. I'm like, oh, like, because usually Catwoman would just follow him down. But no, she's like just gripped onto him. It just stood out to me for some reason.
That's funny. Yeah, I think for my favorite, we see a couple different flashback images here, but I think I will highlight the one on 166, which is this single page spread of the Justice Society of America. And so we see Hippolyta, we see Green Lantern, we see Flash, Golden Age Flash, we see Hawkman, we see Dr. Fate, and we see Zatara. And that was just a really, really cool image, man. I really like seeing Dustin Nguyen draw the Justice Society. That really made me happy.
I was really psyched to see the hometown hero Green Lantern back where he belongs.
Now, that said, Matt, did as awesome as this was and as fun as it was that it tied into the prequel frame and as amusing as it is that the Justice Society shows up in an issue called Infestation, which, you know, on the one hand is obviously about Bedbug, but on the other hand, it's sort of about the rise of the superheroes, too. That's all great. But this makes no timeline sense at all, right? None at all.
Oh, no, not at all, because this will put Thomas Wayne in. With the new timeline, no.
Yeah, because it's the Justice Society at this point in time before the New 52 or still World War II. This is 2010, so if you assume Batman's parents were 40 when they were killed, so it's 2010, that means Batman's, we'll say, 35. So Batman was born in then what? 25 years. So he was born in 1975 when this comic came out. And if he was killed in 1983, that means the Waynes would be born in 43, I think.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense at all. I mean, there's no way around it, but I'm okay with it. I never really get how they were ever going to make the Justice Society fit in with anything modern. And something has happened with the new continuity.
I like the Justice Society, but I fell off it sometime in the mid-aughts. For a while in the New 52, they were on a parallel world, and I know Jeff Lemire is doing something different with them now, but I don't know what he's doing.
They've shifted it somehow. They can go back and forth. I don't know how. But back then, this made no sense. No.
Yeah.
This made absolutely no sense.
As far as I'm aware, at this point, they have to be still World War II adjacent. And so having them chilling with Batman's parents in what should be the 60s, probably. It just doesn't make sense.
Although, I will say this, if Bruce and Tommy in the original Hush saw Alan Scott Green Lantern...
Well, that's not as much of a mistake, though, because he has a career after World War II.
All right.
The problem is just Bruce Wayne's parents being the age they're at, with the Justice Society being the age they're at.
So really, the panel should just be... If it was just Green Lantern, Alan Scott, it would make more sense.
This is framing this as these are the earliest adventures of the Justice Society. This is maybe not their first, but this is around when they're debuting. They're a new thing. That's what makes it make sense. If they were like slightly older and slightly grizzled, yeah, I guess you could make it work.
It says it was the first time the city had seen such a gathering of power.
Which I guess if you really wanted to close read it, it's the first time Gotham City. Doesn't mean that they weren't doing all their things everywhere else.
They all came out of retirement to stop this clinic from being overtaken.
One other thing in this issue I wanted to talk about, which actually also points back nostalgically to other comics, is on 167. You get kind of two panels that are interesting. You get one that's on 167. There's an image of Batman, Golden Age Batman, swinging in through a window.
Oh, it's awesome. He's knocking out Dr. Death's bodyguard or whatever. It was racist back in the time.
It's interesting because in those two, I recently read these issues unconnected to this. And Dr. Death is in two issues. He has two different racist bodyguards, and Batman murders both of them.
Well, it was the late 30s.
It was the late 30s. And this is what Dr. Death, kind of Hugo Strange look, right? Although he's slightly before Hugo Strange. This is what Dr. Death looks like as opposed to Golden Age Sandman in their old comics. And then also the panel immediately to the left of that Golden Age recreation panel, you see Catwoman. And it's interesting because she's more or less in her animated series outfit. But the coloring, although somewhat overshadowed, the coloring seems to be more like the early 90s Jim Ballett purple Catwoman costume coloring.
It's a cool look.
It's interesting to see the animated series outfit, which usually has that gray coloring, but here it's more of a muted purple.
A combination of what the comics and the animated series had going on at the time of the 90s.
Yeah, I dig it. Well, Matt, we're at the end for now. We're issue 21, Streets of Gotham, chapter 6, finale. What goes down in the finale?
Well, Bob, guess what? That intern turns out to be Jane Doe. And what does Jane Doe do? She cuts off Hush's face, Bob.
And that leads into your favorite panel, isn't it, Matt?
That's on page 180, Bob. And guess what? That's where Jane Doe cuts off Hush's face. It's disturbing.
It's really messed up. It's very satisfying, stringing Jane Doe and Hush back together.
Now, Jane Doe looks like Bruce Wayne. But it's even less convincing than when Tommy Elliot was wearing his face.
It's almost the face has been worn through overuse, and you can see the lines on it when she's wearing it. It's very disturbing, isn't it?
I wonder if it really, how much it hurt Tommy Elliot. Some of that I understand is, of course, his own skin, but he had to have done a whole lot of plastic work on that too. So maybe he can't feel his face anymore after doing so much surgery.
Just totally numb.
But man, comic books have shown me faceless people so many times now, skinless people.
You just expect it.
I never thought it would be something that comics would constantly just throw at me, but yeah.
And that also goes back to, there's a Golden Age Batman story right after the Dr. Death and the Mad Monk stories where he's coming back from the Mad Monk adventure and he's in Paris and he meets a dude who I don't think has a name, but he's like a duke who, if I remember correctly, had a mad scientist use a laser to burn his entire facial features off. So he's literally a blank mask, question style. But it's his actual face. It's not a mask, like with the question.
I need to look up and see. Has anybody ever really gotten away with wearing someone else's face and it be convincing? You know what I mean? I'm sure there's some serial killer, some crazy person out there that wore his mask. But has anybody gone out in public and done it? And not?
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
Because I just don't think it's as easy as these people make it out to be.
In comic book physics, it's a little easier.
Even with Jane Doe, it's as the comic progresses, the face starts to look better and better. So maybe it's just some power she has.
Wild, man. Wild. Well, as we're winding down, we've talked about a lot of Denny's new characters, and you've had the good idea of ranking the new characters. And again, I haven't liked all of them. The Carpenter and Abuse, not a big fan of either. But I wasn't expecting this, but it is interesting that this arc really does set Judson Pierce up to be a recurring Batman villain, because he dies, but then he gets revived by Dr. Death Toxin, and that changes him. And I don't think he ever has returned, but I would be in theory down for a Judson Pierce return. And it's weird, though, they tease the name Bag of Bones for the new Judson Pierce look after he gets the Dr. Death Toxin and he looks like a skeletal Alfred. And I think Bag of Bones would be good, but the name they actually go with is Skell, which I think is lame. That's a weak name.
It's awful. That's a terrible name. Probably cool in prison.
Skell is a fun euphemism for saying, as I understand it, it means somebody's a thug or a hoodlum. But I like it as an expression, but just as a code name for a villain, it's, I think, pretty lame. And Skell hasn't returned because New 52 happened and things changed, but... Also, I think the fact that his name is just Skell has not really inspired people to revisit Judson Pierce. Another broader point I wanted to make is that I thought it was wild how this issue and House of Hush as a whole recontextualize why Bruce Wayne is going public about funding Batman Inc., which is happening at the same time in the Morrison run. And it seems doing that is in some way maybe a defensive move against Hush. And it's also maybe a way to cover up some of the weird stuff that Hush was doing. And also, since Hush raises the issue of why doesn't Bruce do more with his money? Oh, this is what I'm doing. I'm funding Batman Inc., right? I just thought that was wild that this run is in conversation with the Morrison run to that extent. And it's also funny that Hush is saying all this and his Arkham psychiatrist is just, yeah, it sounds like you're paranoid, man. It sounds like you're delusional.
No one will listen to people in Arkham when they tell them that Bruce Wayne is Batman. I think Riddler said it. He said it. They just don't keep good files on these people. Everybody comes there, Bruce Wayne's Batman.
A lot of people say they're Napoleon, too. Yeah. Ain't Napoleon still around?
All these psychos have some obsession with Bruce Wayne being Batman. What's going on with that?
Why can't they just leave this poor
Bruce? Yeah.
And then I wanted to flag, as this is maybe too obvious, but I think my favorite panel is that we finally see the literal House of Hush. And in some sense, it's a TAS-style version of Arkham Asylum. It's merging the TAS cityscape with Arkham Asylum, and it looks really cool. But it also is just a representation of Hush's fragmented and chaotic mind, and it looks really great. Lynn goes out of the park, the building and the line work on this House of Hush. So that was my.
Okay, let me ask you this, Bob. Why did he put Dick Grayson in the center? Is it because eventually doesn't he take Dick Grayson's face?
Does he do that in a Nightwing comic or something?
I think so, yes.
I haven't read many Nightwing comics, man. I haven't read that. I could see how we saw this in the Hush Bachelor Party issue that you didn't like that tied into the Tom King Batman wedding. I think it makes sense for Tommy Elliott is Bruce's childhood best friend. And it makes sense to me that he would have a special resentment for Dick Grayson as Batman's oldest son.
Oh, wait a minute. I think the idea here is that you have two Batman.
That was the other point, because he in Hush Money in the early part of this.
That was Nightwing.
Because that's Damian, not Nightwing, right? There's the two Batman, there's Bruce and Dick, and then I think that's Damian.
Possibly, I don't know. But it's the House of Hush.
It's the House of Hush.
He also has the bust of two burly men like in his house.
It's still a cool image, even if we can't pin everything down about it exactly. Well, Matt, as we always do when we end things, I like to end with a question of ranking. So would you agree with the order I've ranked the Paul Dini collections here, or would you want...
Well, you've got Death in the City at the beginning. It's the best. I agree. You've got Private Casebook at number two.
And just to be clear, I guess we should say Death in the City is the second Paul Dini collection. That's the one that has especially the two-part or three-part Joker Zatanna story that's very good.
Right.
And it also, that doesn't have that. But yeah, it's some other one-offs too, that two-part Joker Zatanna, and also some good Riddler PI stuff, as yeah. I recall.
And you've got Private Casebook.
Which is the first collection with Destin Wynn. It's the third collection overall. It's got a lot of stuff with the Lady Ventriloquist, as I recall.
That was really good stuff. Then you've got House of Hush, which is what we just covered. You got Hush Money.
Which was the first Streets of Gotham arc, which would mostly dealt with Hush having Bruce Wayne's face, but it was just a little shorter, a little quicker than this, right?
Right. You have Detective.
Which is the very first collection, and I honestly, in hindsight, kind of weak, although the one-shot issue where the Joker kidnaps Tim Drake and goes on a Christmas shooting spree is a great, great issue.
The fantastic issue. The biggest highlight of that.
The rest of that collection's not bad, but that's easily the standout.
All right, Heart of Hush.
That's the first Hush story that closed out Detective Comics, which is fun. It's well done. Do you agree with me that House of Hush and Hush Money are both head and shoulders above it?
Much so. Heart of Hush, it's still got a weird... The whole Catwoman Heart thing to me still is a little goofy.
He's having to do a lot of cleanup, I think, with both like Batman RIP and Final Crisis and... The Hush Returns in that story, which maybe puts it in a weird...
That is exactly what happened, which is why it's probably the weakest of the Hush trilogy. Leviathan is your last one, which is just...
Even though that Mr. Zaz story is Dini and somewhat advances the stuff, it's really not that important.
I would say this is all just Dini's work.
So, listeners, that was the question of ranking the arcs of Dini's detective run. And then the other question... We like to rank these comics on a big list. Right now, we've got 19 items on our list. John Hickman's Fantastic Four at the top. A.J. Lieberman's whole Gotham Knights run, not just Hush Returns, at the bottom at number 19. And then we put, after we did the four collections of Dini's detective run, we put it at number 8 in between Batman City of Madness, a very good miniseries, and just above Archie versus Punisher, a very fun little one-off crossover. And... We did that because we weren't sure if Streets of Gotham would be more of the same, a new series, or something separate. Rank Streets of Gotham with Detective Comics, right? It sounds like that's all just one big Paul Dini run in your mind, too.
If you read his detective stuff and then this, it's all just the universe in and of itself.
Okay. Well, then I think the only question then is we're definitely just going to make it one big Paul Dini run of Detective Comics and Streets of Gotham, and then... I assume we'll address it when we read it, but I assume when we read Gotham City Sirens, we'll treat Gotham City Sirens as a separate thing.
Yeah.
But the question is, does that change the ranking? Should the Dini run? Because I actually think I like the Dini run better after reading Streets, but I'm not sure that it should change it. So would you want to promote it or demote it at all on the list? Or would you just add Streets of Gotham to it and let it all sit at number 8 on our list?
Personally, I would just keep it at 8. Because Batman City of Madness is really good.
Because I think City of Madness is better, more contained, more controlled than this.
Right.
Also some interestingly similar themes. Although I guess with Batman crazy villains, you always sort of get to a similar place.
Yeah.
And then But I will say, even though I wouldn't raise it any on the list as it is now, I do think this makes me think more highly of the DD run.
Yeah, I wouldn't make it go down. It's better than Archie versus Punisher. But it wouldn't touch the Fantastic Four stuff at this point. And definitely Boy Wonder is better. So yeah, I would leave it at 8.
Okay, yeah, I feel good with where it is. If anything, it just means it's going to be harder for new things coming into the list to get above the Dini run. Definitely a lot of stuff would be better, but I'm going to be more reluctant to rank stuff above the Dini run now than I would have been after we finished Detective.
You're going to have a pretty strong Batman story, maybe a single volume Batman story to really surpass this run.
Well, Matt, this has been a great pleasure talking the Paul Dini run.
I believe so.
Yeah, 6 episodes of Dini and then something like 8 episodes of Hush. It's been a real pleasure talking about. We're going to get to Gotham City Sirens at some point. Not sure when, but at some point. I fully intend for us to talk Gotham City Sirens. And listeners, we will keep covering Hattush. We will keep covering Hush Part 2 or Hush 2, whatever you want to call it. And check us out on Uncanny Treks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Have a great night.
Thanks for listening.